Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 285, recorded on January 30th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. The show is sponsored by Yamaha, and I'll be talking about their AG USB audio mixers later on in the show. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. And does Yamaha have a jingle? You know, like Yamaha or something?
I think they do now.
They do now. Yeah. My bill is in the mail.
Yeah, yeah. Your bill to Yamaha they'll be receiving.
Yes.
Cool. Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Sweet. Well, actually, Superman does good. You're doing well.
What?
No. Adam may do good, too.
It's too early.
You don't know.
Okay. That's
far,
true.
Far too early.
I think Adam probably does do good.
On a Saturday.
I think Adam does good. I think Adam also has an alter ego, so he can go out and do his good, and not have to deal with the legal repercussions or the adoring fans
of being a vigilante.
I'm a mild mannered podcaster.
You have some really really good hair for a vigilante, like that big swoop in your spike in your Skype picture. It looks like you have to use a lot of like cement to keep it.
No,
you know, you're talking about my Coco Pompadour.
Your Buffant, or what is it? Yeah.
Coco Pompadour.
Coco Pompadour.
More of a Pompadour than a Buffant.
Nice. Yeah, how do you keep it like that? Magic?
No idea.
Justice? Is it justice that keeps it that way?
Yes, it's justice.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay, cool. So nobody knows what we're talking about. Well, I guess, is that your Twitter picture?
Yeah.
Go look at Adam's Twitter picture.
You can find many a picture. I think my Twitter picture is the awesome drawing that Len Peralta did for the Mac Show.
Mm. That's a different drawing?
Caricature.
I think that's the same one. I don't know. Whatever. Since we're talking about Twitter, I thought it was interesting that they changed what faves are. Right? Now they're likes. They're instead of stars.
They're not stars.
They're not stars. They're hearts.
Except Tweetbot hasn't been updated on iOS yet.
Yeah, it has.
Actually, it happened either last night or this morning.
It was definitely yesterday sometime.
Really? So, I thought I updated yesterday. They did on the Mac. I saw it on the Mac.
That's when I learned about it.
On my iOS device. Oh, cool. I got to run an update then. Or let me see if it's updated. Probably already auto-updated.
So maybe people who have always been using it for that will maybe get more? I guess that's probably the benefit of that. People will be I know what a fave is now.
It's a heart.
It's a little heart.
Yeah, because they were bookmarks before? Who knows what...
They were stars.
What Biz intended those to be.
Yeah, they were stars before.
I know they were stars before, but, I mean, we used them as hearts for a long time.
I used them as stars.
Yeah, I think a lot of people used them as, like, these are my favorite tweets that I want to come back to. I think they call them faves.
Yeah,
right?
Faves.
So like, I want to, like you said, kind of like a bookmark. I think a lot of people did use it that way. So now, I guess it's kind of changed, right? We're just supposed to, like, heart them or love them.
Like them. Yeah, I think they're likes.
Yeah, we're supposed to Facebook them or something. I don't know.
No, they're not Facebook.
Twitter is definitely not Facebook.
Yeah, how could you?
I'm just stirring the pot here.
It's okay. We like that. Apple seeded a second beta of iOS 9.3, which is our favorite version of iOS 9 so far, at least for me, because it has Night Shift. And God, it's like they're thinking about things again with their software, because they added a toggle now for the Night Shift.
Cool.
Into Control Center. So now you can toggle it on or off without having to jump into settings and get your settings on.
Can you use Siri?
I don't know. What would I tell her to do? Turn on
night shift. Turn off night shift, I guess.
Turn on night shift.
I don't know what you mean by turn on next shift.
You guys heard what I said, right?
Awesome. That is so Siri right there.
Shut up, Siri. God, you're so stupid.
That may be beyond my abilities at the moment.
Okay, so now we know
it's not. She can't do it yet.
Yeah, pro tip, you can correct Siri if you tap on the text that she thought she heard. And you can you can edit it. I guess they changed the icon. It used to be a little lamp. Now it's a little eyeball. I like the lamp.
Ew. Yeah, the lamp makes more sense. Actually, a sun would probably make more sense.
Well, it's an eyeball where the pupil is like a moon.
Oh. That's kind of creepy.
It's a little bit creepy. but yeah, good for Apple for doing things that are good. And I think they moved it. Someone said they moved it. No, they didn't move it. I don't know what they were talking about. Someone said they moved. Oh. Yeah, so it's in display and brightness, but then you click on night shift and then it's in its own thing.
When do we think they'll release that to the world?
Never.
Man. They're just going to
I haven't upgraded yet. I didn't jump in on the beta yet. They released it as public beta too, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit more staggered than in the past, but I'm on the public beta.
Mm. Yeah, I could jump in on the developer beta. I just, as cool as Night Shift sounds, it just didn't seem like a thing I wanted to bother with any other issues to have. I was just going to wait for them to release it. I figure it's not going to take long.
It's it's one of those things that I use constantly. You're probably not as big of a Flux person as I am.
Well, but, I mean, I've never used Flux, but I mean...
Oh, you don't use Flux? That's crazy. Yeah, you should. Flux is awesome.
Yeah, I've used Flux on my Mac. And the problem I have is that oftentimes when I'm up late enough where Flux is really useful, I'm also working in Photoshop and I need to see accurate colors, so I keep shutting it off.
You know,
I'm old, Michael. That's the thing is I'm in bed by 10. Come on.
Well, good for you. but Jeff, you can set Flux. So you can, if you go into disable on your Mac, you can either do for an hour until sunrise, or you can say for the current app.
Yes. Which is what I've done.
Yeah.
And
so
I'm in Photoshop, it's a lot at night.
Okay. So you're just chopping if you're up at night.
Yeah.
Okay.
So actually, night shift is going to be better for me. I mean, I would never. I generally try to not use my computer after work hours. So I'm on my Mac from maybe 7 to 7 or something like that.
Sure.
Not much after that. So I guess I'd get a little benefit in the early evening, but after that, I mean, when I'm working at night, I'm mostly on my iPad.
Yeah. Well, and it's also good for those times where you're drifting off to sleep and someone sends you an urgent, emoji text message or something and you have to look at it and you're not blinding yourself.
And you're like, yeah, I turn my brightness way down to compensate for that now. So it'll be nice to have something that can automatically not like glare me out of bed.
Yeah. They've also seeded the second beta of tvOS 9.2, which of course includes, I guess the biggest thing is folders. Right,
I'm so not excited about folders. I think they should have thought a little bit more about
instead of just being like, okay, it's folders.
Well, yeah, because I mean, for a television screen, like on a 50-inch screen, it seems like you could do better than a folder.
It feels like instead of thinking about the platform where this interface is being used, they just put folders on because people wanted a way to organize apps.
Well, and it was easy to implement. It was probably like, oh, well, we already have folders in iOS. This is a variant, so we'll just do it the same way. It just feels like a compromise. Like, okay, yes. People want this. We'll give it to them, but we're not going to work on it too hard.
They also added podcasts, right? That's new to 9.2?
Except, is it true that they don't have video podcasts?
I haven't tried video podcasts with it yet. That'd be kind of lame if it doesn't.
Yeah, that would be...
I thought I read that it was audio only.
I mean, they may be working on it.
You're right. I think it was the kind of thing, because it's beta. That was my hope, was that it just hadn't been rolled in yet. So I don't know what this update. That was the first update. I thought I read somewhere that they said, oh, it's only doing audio podcasts when they first added it. But
yeah, here, let me check right here. Podcasts. Yeah, the thing I'm looking at doesn't say anything about that. New app switcher, of course. The stuff that's new to beta 2 is they've added the ability to have your iCloud photo library to check that out, which is nice. And in addition, it will also work with live photos, so you can see those on your Apple TV. So that's nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
Excuse me. What else do we have here? Ooh, okay. So Music Memos and GarageBand, Apple released a new app and an update. So Music Memos is, I guess the idea is, if you have an idea for a song or something, you want to just get it out of your head and record it into a nice medium. You could just put it into voice memos, but that doesn't, it's not really tailored to music. So what Music Memos does, it has a few cool things. One, you could just press the record button and it just records, or there's an auto button, which is really nice. So you just press the button, you get all set up and, you know, take the time that you need to get ready to play. And then when you start playing, it will sense that you're playing music and it will just automatically record. And when you're finished, it stops and it just stays on auto. And so it'll continue grabbing audio for you, which is nice. There's a little tuner in there, so you can figure out, you can tune your instruments. I guess the coolest thing is, actually there are a lot of cool things. So it will analyze the stuff that you're playing. It'll figure out what chords they are and that sort of thing. and you can add backing tracks to your recording. So I just, here, let's see here. I recorded something. Okay, so this is just a recording of a guitar. And then I can just drop in drums. And you can change, like, how complex or simple or loud.
That's pretty cool.
This is all in the memos?
Yeah.
Was that guitar you recorded? Or?
Yeah, I recorded that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just like, it picked up exactly what was going on with the guitar, and it seemed like someone was hanging out with you playing the drums while you played your guitar.
Yeah.
Really cool.
And then you can sing and lay down multiple tracks, right?
So it's not a multi-track thing. It's sort of I think it's just like an idea sketch pad sort of thing.
So you build up an idea, but can't you like then grab those and pull them into GarageBand, and aren't
totally,
they like separated out or something like that?
So you can, you record the one track, right? And then you can see what it sounds like with a drum kit. And you can also add bass, which you can barely even hear out of an iPhone speaker. So if you have to hook it up to something else, and it does analysis of the chords and everything. So it tells you what the chords are. You can't really tweak the tempo or anything like that in any way. It's mainly just for the idea. But then you can take it into GarageBand, as you always could. And then GarageBand also has... GarageBand, the update that they put out, has a butt ton of really cool things. A lot of stuff it seems like they brought in from Logic.
Yep.
So they have the drummers. So
the drummer.
The,
yeah,
yeah, the drummer.
The drums.
I haven't really even played with it. So you can just have...
It's pretty cool.
You can have it... so how does it work, Jeff? How does the drummer thing work?
Well, so the drummer thing, I haven't really messed with very much. So it just kind of did its thing. And I'm like, okay, there's a drummer just kind of playing. This is cool. But when I was messing around with the other side of it, where... You can make sure your own loops from the library.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the part that I was really messing around with.
Yeah, me too. Well, okay, so the drummer thing, I think it probably takes, I assume it won't like live improvise over something that you're playing. That would be like incredible AI, beautiful, like next century kind of technology. But I'm pretty sure it works similar to the music memos thing where you record your track of your instrument and then you just tell it to improvise over that and then it will just magically do that on a recorded track.
Yeah, you could. The way it works is you bring up this, there's a, like, you add a drummer and there's different, there's like different drummers that you can pick from.
Yes, yeah.
So there's like different personalities. So you've got, you know,
Kyle.
I don't know, hip hop drummer.
Logan.
And you've got a jazz drummer and you've got a, I'm making some of this stuff, American R&B drummer. And so you kind of pick the style of music that you want.
God, this
is cool.
And
then once you have your drummer picked out, he has his kit and then there's some controls so you can change, you know, the beat of the hi-hat and the snare, and you can add and remove percussion. You can set up how often you want him to, you know, be kicking out fills on the drums.
This is cool.
And then there's a little you can change it from simple to complex, and between loud and soft, there's like a little square where you can slide a little dot around and say, you know, I want it loud and more complex, or I want it a little bit softer and more simple. That sort of thing. And then you can change the swing note. I mean, there's a lot of different controls on here.
Yeah,
so you basically can kind of, and then the drummer just does its thing. So you're not really controlling what they do. You're more controlling the personality and the style and the tempo and all that sort of stuff. So you can find the right backing for the style of thing that you want to build out. Pretty sweet.
Okay, so I'm looking at this right now and yeah, so I just was able to share out
the personalities are funny too. Like when they're all named. So you go like, Darcy, tasteful, restrained, and dedicated to serving the song. Darcy plays simple, tasteful pop beats on a natural sounding kit.
From a free range kit. That was fed antibiotic free.
Free range. Kit, yeah.
Feed.
Nice. Okay. So yeah, I can take, so I got my idea. Ooh, no way. Okay. So I got So I just used AirDrop to share my recording from my phone to my iPad in GarageBand, and it magically added Darcy immediately,
right,
by default, and also added an electric guitar. I bet I could do some like really cool things with the. Like have someone like solo over this thing, probably.
Yeah,
dude, this is so
much
fun.
Add a vocal track. You got a song in, you know, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Amp. Let's see. There's got to be guitar in here somewhere. Smart guitar. So there's probably not like a guy that you can tell to solo over.
Right? No, there's not like a solo. But like the smart guitar is kind of cool because I mean you need to just kick out chords, right? And little riffs and things like that, I believe.
Oh, there is autoplay, right? What does that do? I don't know. Okay, I'll have to play with it some more.
The point is like garage between the music notes, the memos thing, and the updates to GarageBand on the iPad. I mean, Apple has really stepped up the game.
They've like tripled down on
music stuff. And especially like on the iPad Pro, you've got so much space. I could see this really being a combination for, you know, musicians, especially touring musicians and stuff like that. Like you come up with an idea, you pop out the music memo thing, you record a couple riffs. Then, you know, as you have more time, you whip out the iPad Pro and you throw it, you like, just like you did, Michael, you airplay your stuff over there and you start layering the thing and you start figuring out
the
song.
And you can add loops. You know,
and then
stuff.
At the end of all of that, you take that into Logic or whatever when you get back to the studio.
And do some real stuff. Well, the cool okay, so there's that part. And then the even cooler part. So if you're not a musician, you don't even have to worry about that part because you can just pick it up and start playing with the loops that they have. They have so many different styles. You can go like EDM, hip hop, dubstep, R&B, house, chill, rock, electro funk, beat masher. So I think this might be the house thing. So you can, they give you a preset of a bunch of different loops.
And then you just tap on them.
And you can tap on them, or you can tap on whole rows. So this is just like a little
and it automatically starts recording. So it's actually laying this down into a track in GarageBand as you're messing with it.
Yeah.
So look at that. Michael's making a song right now.
Yeah, it's the same song that everybody has on the GarageBand, but... You can do filters and square waves and repeaters. There's all kinds of cool stuff in this. So check it out. GarageBand is basically free if you have a, you know, like an iPhone. When did GarageBand became free for new devices? Around the iPhone 6, I think, right?
It was before that.
Yeah, before that. So
like
you,
maybe the iPhone 5.
Yeah, so basically you should be able to get a free version of GarageBand and just do some epically cool stuff.
But even if not, what is it? Is it $5 or $10?
$5 for something this powerful? This thing is worth like hundreds of dollars. And it's not just cute little loops, like pre-made loops. You can actually go into all of these. These are real MIDI instruments. You can go into them. You can edit them. You can create your own loops with a keyboard or a drum kit. And make some really genuinely new, unique music with this thing. It's very cool.
$4.99. So, I mean, even if you don't have an iOS device where you get it for free, it's like if you're into music at all, $5. You got to have a copy of GarageBand really on your iOS.
It's just something
device.
Fun to play with too. Yeah, if you're just messing around or showing someone your iPad, it's really nice. Let's see. So maybe talk about something that's not so cool, that California is now joining in on the whole effort to put in backdoors in smartphone encryption.
Wouldn't go that far, but there's a senator that has a bill that's, you know, totally... It's unrelated to a certain degree, but, I mean, he's trying to fight... basically human trafficking. And one of the ways they want to do that within this bill is by forcing the whole opening up of the encryption thing by law enforcement.
Yeah.
Which would do nothing to stop human trafficking.
Exactly.
It's a ruse or red herring.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, to be honest.
I hope not. I mean, it's probably better that it, I mean, I'm sure Apple has some headquarters in New York, but being that their main office is in California, I'm sure that they will have a little bit more of an active presence in making sure that this doesn't happen.
Here's why this guy's going to have a lot of trouble. You know, Apple is a massive company, and
there's also Google that's on the same side as Apple.
And both these companies are in California, and they both have very powerful lobbying efforts in the state, and they're going to protect their business. And so you can just bet that there's a lot of lobbying going on right now.
And it's kind of
by Apple and Google.
And even if this gets passed and becomes law, you know that Google and Apple and several other companies have already started planning their legal actions, you know, for just in case. So they'll be ready.
Oh, totally.
Paper.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so they say that the penalty, I think it's the same as the one in New York.
It's the same as in New York.
$2,500 per phone, and I assume that is per request per phone. Or not, I shouldn't say it that way. It's per phone that has a request for a, you know, an unlock.
That's how I interpret it also.
Yeah, it's not really clear, but I think so if they go to request it, it's a $2,500 fine.
If they don't.
But it could be it could be interpreted too. If you look at the language, to me it's a little confusing. It almost, some ways it sounds like
phone sold
for everyone that you sell, whether or not we're trying to unlock it, but I don't know how they would enforce that. So that's probably up for a judge to sort of decide. It'll probably take like the first case to be brought. But again, it's never going to get that far. I guarantee you it's not going to get that far.
I would be stunned if it got that far. And especially in California, where you have the most valuable company on the planet.
Put it this way. All Apple has to do is say, look, here's the reality. This thing passes. You know, we were going to build that big campus in Cupertino. Yeah, we can just leave that. And all of the tax revenue that we generate for the state, which is suffering right now, you guys don't want that, do you? You know, you wouldn't care if that went away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Could you imagine if Apple just said, okay, we're done building the spaceship campus. We're leaving the state. Goodbye.
And I don't know that they would really do that, but they could use it as a threat. They could just say, look, you know, we'll find another state to do business in. And, you know, because that's the financial pull that they have with the state of California.
Why couldn't they,
the leverage that they would have.
Why couldn't they just make a law that compels people to unlock their phone?
I will tell you, Michael, because you have your Fourth Amendment rights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the right to not incriminate yourself.
Right. And there's nothing preventing a law enforcement agency from requesting a search warrant that would compel you to hand over your password. But then your attorney would turn around and say, "Whoa, self-incrimination, can't do that." So, yeah, but there's nothing stopping a law enforcement agency from getting a search warrant.
Now, what about?
But here's the funny thing: if you have your password written down somewhere on something that's in something in your device, they can compel you for that piece of paper, and you have to hand it over, and then they'll have your password.
That's absolutely true.
Well, as long as they can get a hold of
evidence,
as long as they can get a hold of it, right? I mean,
so
they can't.
If you have your passwords in a, say, safe deposit box written down, which many people do,
they can get a search warrant for that safe deposit box.
Yeah, and then they could acquire that information. Now they'd have to kind of figure out that maybe you have that, but it could happen. So the thing is they can't compel you for anything that is only known. Like they can't take information out of your head.
Right. But if they have, if they can get a warrant for your safe deposit box, what that means is they have testimony from someone else, from you or someone else, saying all of my passwords are in the safe deposit box, and then at that point they now can go to a judge and say, look, we have this sworn testimony saying that the passwords are here, so we need a search warrant to go get them. And then at that point, it's up to the judge to decide if they'll grant the search warrant or not, and they probably will.
Yeah. But it's really weird because I was looking into this a little bit and, you know, what would happen. So I think it's the Fourth Amendment, too. There's some stuff in that sort of between the Fifth and the Fourth Amendment, there's contradictory sort of language that affects this whole encryption thing. Because I think in the Fourth Amendment, it gives you the right to protect your information. I forget how
the language is. Isn't it search and seizure primarily? Unreasonable search and seizure?
Yep.
And then the Fifth is, that's testifying against yourself, right?
Oh, here it is. The Fourth Amendment provides the right of people to secure their persons, houses, papers, and effects. So what you could interpret there is that if I take the protection of I want to encrypt my information, then that might, you know, that plays into this. So, you know, it's like Apple gives me the ability to encrypt my stuff. I set the passcode, so I'm saying I want that stuff encrypted. That's one of my rights under the Fourth Amendment. So the question becomes, even if these laws pass, you know, where they're going to compel Apple or another company, is that taking away my right to under the Fourth Amendment? I don't really know. I'm not a legal person, but I just found it interesting when I was reading up on this a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you have the issue of the people that created these amendments. they did not have even an inkling of the types of technology we would have today.
Right.
So were they talking in a literal sense, meaning just papers, or were they talking about documents in any form?
Yeah. So here's the thing on the Fourth Amendment. The ultimate goal of the provision is to protect people's right to privacy and freedom from arbitrary governmental intrusions, right? Mm-hmm. So, and if there's probable cause, yes, under the Fourth Amendment, they're allowed to seize my property. But if I also have the right to my privacy to encrypt, you know, now encrypt that data. Back then, like Jeff was saying, they didn't think about this, but, you know, I would imagine a smart lawyer could almost argue, hey, look, this violates Fourth Amendment. You can seize that property under Fourth Amendment, but if it's encrypted, you know, that person has the right to have encrypted that data.
Well, it would be very easy for you even back then, there were means of encrypting data if it was written down. Where you would have to have some kind of, you'd have to have a key in your head that you know how to decrypt it. So you write everything in code.
And it becomes the government's responsibility to have to figure out how to decode that. It's not, you know, to compel a company or somebody else to break someone's privacy rights.
Yeah.
Seems like a violation to me, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I'm sure this will be a topic for a while. Like years.
No. I'm sure the counter argument would be, well, Apple's a third party, and they're the ones encrypting it. You're not the one encrypting it, so that right doesn't apply to you or
Apple.
Well,
no, you're encrypting it. You're telling your phone to encrypt it for you. They just happen to have the means to do that. They produce
the means.
Again,
I think it gets in, yeah, it would be something, again, lawyers and people would probably have to argue, and they would argue back and forth. I'm just throwing up.
We should get a lawyer. Hey, Jeff, why don't you become a lawyer so we can ask you questions?
I've played a lawyer on stage.
Yeah.
But that's the ultimate thing, too, is like if Apple is compelled, you know, like Jeff was alluding to earlier, if Apple is compelled to and Google are compelled to take this encryption or build in a backdoor, the only people it's going to impact is the people who are using the technology to protect their privacy, say like my credit card data or something like that. Because now thieves have a backdoor in, and the thieves themselves who are already doing illegal things, and it just because they have iPhones, it's more convenient for them to use encryption, they're just going to go do encryption on their own. There's plenty of third-party apps. There's plenty of other technologies that basically mimic exactly what Apple's built in that can be used to encrypt all of these communications.
Totally. And you can come up with your own encryption schemes. If you look at the way that you know, the standard encryption schemes out there work, there are certain, you know, just standard sets of numbers that are used to generate the encrypted data. And you could just change that and come up with your own standard based on that, that, mm-hmm. you know, there are a lot of ways, and it's just, yeah.
Yeah. And the people that this or legislation like this is supposed to protect, it really doesn't, because all it really does is open up a door so that the people that the government is trying to catch can now have an easier way to get at our personal data, like Adam said, our banking information.
Totally. Yeah. I should really talk to my linear algebra teacher, because I guess he used to do like make encryption schemes and work on that.
You know what's weird about this government thing too is, you know, how many people working within the government use iPhones and iOS devices. You'd think like they'd be concerned about foreign spies, because if they make Apple open up these backdoors, I can guarantee you China and Russia and you know, all these other countries,
oh, they would immediately
find
have
ways
that
to use those same backdoors,
of course,
to crack, you know, crack into
totally, yeah,
governmental
mad espionage all the way.
But again, well, I think they don't worry about it because the government's going to go out, just like I said, and they'll use these other third-party tools that don't have backdoors.
No, they won't. They're going to use iPhones.
They know how to do that.
They're going to use iPhones. They're not going to mess with other stuff. They're too lazy.
Yeah, but they'll develop their own messaging app that has encryption and tell their agents, here, you use this, don't use iMessage because that has a backdoor. Use.
Well, we all know how well that worked with Hillary Clinton. She, you know, she used her own shit. Yeah, let's stop diving down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. It's infuriating.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, let's talk about our sponsor, which is Yamaha at usa.yamaha.com. The AG
jingle.
Oh yeah, Jeff.
Yamaha.
Thank you. The AG is a multi-purpose high-resolution mixer and USB audio interface designed for webcasters, gamers, mobile musicians, and more. And it's the audio interface that I'm actually using right now. And now that I've played with the new GarageBand, I kind of want to get a little adapter and play with it in GarageBand.
The camera kit adapter would work just fine.
It does. That's actually a supported method for doing
sweet.
This. Yeah. There's full iOS support with this thing. So the AG03 and AG06 both enable content producers to mix USB audio from the computer as its own channel and eliminate the need to master and monitor complicated software. So you don't have to worry about audio hijack or any of that stuff. The AG03 is the three-channel USB audio interface, perfect for small audio setups that are also portable, if you want to do that. And the AG06 is the six-channel version, great for musicians and pro podcasting. The AG comes equipped with a headset input as well as an input featuring phantom power, giving you the option to use either a conventional computer headset or a professional condenser mic, whichever you prefer. Both mixers feature a 2PC switch that lets users select which input gets routed to a desktop or iOS device, making it easy to create great sounding podcasts and other internet content. They feature pro quality audio effects, compression, iOS compatibility, and a rugged metal chassis. USB power allows you to operate your AG without an external power source, keeping your required space to a minimum, which, like, compared to my previous setup, I had, let's see, six extra wires coming out of this thing. It was kind of nuts. This is much nicer. I really like it. And it can also be driven by a mobile battery for use on the go. So you actually get, there's an extra micro USB adapter on the back, so you can just plug in I think it's a 5-volt 2-amp kind of deal, standard USB power, so you can power it on the go and then plug it into your iPad or whatever you want to do. They're compatible with iOS devices via the Lightning to USB camera adapter. It has a 3.5 millimeter aux input, which lets you connect and listen to mobile devices, tablets, and more. If you're a podcaster, the loopback function consolidates all input channels and playback tracks and routes that mix back to your internet streaming software or recording or what have you for live streaming. No complicated software required. And really cool, the AG's high quality design even enables 192 kilohertz by 24-bit sound that can reproduce even the most subtle nuances of original recordings. AG's sound quality is ideal for capturing the purest reproduction of analog recordings when using it to archive treasured collections. So both of those, the AG03 and the AG06, are available from usa.yamaha.com. Check them out. They're nice little mixers. And with that, 4-inch iPhones. It's going to be called the iPhone 5 SE.
Biggest marketing mistake in the world, I think.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah, let's...
Maybe not in the world. I'm being extreme. I think it's a bad marketing choice.
Calling it the 5 SE. Well, calling it the SE anything...
calling it the 5 anything, I think, is a mistake.
Well, both of those is a mistake. But the SE kind of gives, longtime Apple fans... the shakes.
I want them to call it the iPhone 5GS.
Oh, man. Wouldn't you just buy the crap out of that?
I would.
Was that a good one?
The Apple IIGS was an awesome computer.
It was one of the last Apple IIs, and it failed miserably, but it was an awesome computer.
Yeah, I had one, and I could not justify for a really long time buying a Mac because I couldn't get a Mac that would do everything my Apple IIGS did.
Oh, okay.
It was the first Apple II. I think that was in color.
Yeah, let's see. Memory and graphics. Graphics had a custom.
Well, it was the first Apple, it was the first Apple II computer that had a true GUI.
Ooh, yeah. GUI.
But I mean, you could do color previously on Apple computers, no problem.
Oh.
But a full on GUI. I mean, it shipped with a mouse and
a 3.5-inch floppy.
Mm-hmm.
Option. I think it was an option, but we had the 3.5-inch floppy.
Ooh, baby. Tell me more. 128 kilobit ROMs.
RODOS.
All kinds of things.
We still have ours, and it still runs. Let me just put it that way.
It's still like managing the cleaning on your pool or something?
Mine is tucked away in a box, but I bet if I pulled it out, it would fire right up.
I bet my Raspberry Pi would kick its ass.
Well, yeah, performance-wise. but the point is, like, every old Mac that I have is pretty much at some point, other than my Mac Mini, which is freaking workhorse.
Dude, yeah.
You know, like my old iBook G4, which I love, died. My old, you know, iMac, 20-inch iMac, died. You know, logic board dead.
What happened to your, which iMac is it?
It was like the original white 20-inch iMac that had the bad capacitors, you know.
You can fix those.
I swapped out so many motherboards on those.
You can fix them. It just involves replacing 29 and, you know, desoldering and resoldering about 29 capacitors.
Yeah, do that. Capacitors are cheap.
Well, yeah, it's a $30 worth of parts.
Send it to me.
You know, 3 days worth of labor.
Send it to me. It'll be a fun project for me doing electronics.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
If you want to do that, I've been looking for someone to do it for me.
Oh, I mean, I want to keep it afterwards.
You want the 20-inch iMac, G5 iMac? Sure.
Yeah, it can have it. That'd be kind of fun. I've got a little collection. I've got my iMac G3. It's an Indigo. And I've got a Mac. I don't remember.
My only old Mac that has survived. Well, we have a 2009 iMac that we haven't retired. But the only other one that has survived is my blue and white G3, which still runs.
I have a Mac Plus that still runs.
Nice.
Mine has the broken has the video card issue. My Plus, it still turns on, but the video, I got to swap out that video daughter board or whatever it's called.
No, I'm pretty lucky because mine is fully functional. It's pretty awesome.
I have a Macintosh Classic, although I feel like that's not like that cool of a machine.
It isn't.
Yeah. Thanks. But I think it's cool to me because it didn't work because it had leaky capacitors.
Yep.
And I put it in the washing or the logic board in the washing machine or the dishwasher in it, and it fixed it.
So but you're proving my point about the old Apple IIs. The thing about, and this is a testament to, I think, Woz and his engineering.
Yeah, what are we talking about again?
We're talking about the fact that the Apple IIs all still, like almost all of them, if you can find an old one,
it still probably runs
and works fine.
They probably have like not bad components and stuff that you have to replace or anything like that.
Well, and they were just designed and engineered so well, you know, and then it just
high quality. Yeah.
Anything Apple from the 90s is complete crap.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, but anyway, we were talking about 4-inch iPhones.
4-inch iPhones. Yeah,
so
if they do it, it's not going to be called a 4 or a 5 or an SE.
The 5GS.
Yeah, so I don't know where the hell that rumor came from. Actually, I do. It was
reminds
a 9 to 5 Mac.
It reminds me of the Macintosh SE, right? Wasn't there a Mac SE?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And I think that's why people were so, like, confused by them calling it an SE. It seems like, according to 9 to 5 Mac, actually, no, TechCrunch. I forget where it's coming from. But basically, the rumor is we're going to see an event in March that would include the launch of the iPhone 5SE or whatever the hell the new 4-inch iPhone's called, the iPad Air 3, and at this point, new watch bands, which, like, okay, whatever. I take it every event Apple's going to do at this point is just going to have new watch bands.
Right. I'm still waiting for the watch band for my MacBook Pro.
That's going to be a big band. I think it's going to involve
maybe this spring.
Bungee cords.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
Yeah. And then we got, I would say, the first legit leak of a picture of the new 4-inch iPhone. This one looks pretty real. It's just, so it's a side-by-side iPhone 5, you know, probably 5 or 5S, next to what basically looks like an iPhone 6, but the same size as the 5.
Didn't somebody throw out a rumor, too, though, that the 5SC was not going to take on the design stylings of the 6 and was going to look just like a 5S?
That's why they were calling it the 5SC. But at this point, it seems the rumors have kind of... It's been split 50-50 pretty well, that it, you know, either it's going to look like a 5 or it's going to look like a 6. I think at this point, it's pretty clear that it's going to be a... it's going to have the stylings of the 6. It's going to have an A9 processor, which, I mean, it makes a lot more sense than having a new phone out that is two processor generations behind, you know, when the 7 comes out.
Yes, which also makes the naming convention that they're tossing around totally stupid.
It's going to be like Gil Emilio all over again. It's like the Performa. They're turning the iPhone into the Performa line.
Yeah.
Let's just do three others. We're going to have we'll have the 5C, the 5SE, the 5GS, the 5900C. Like, come on.
Yeah. And then you move up to the Quadra line.
Yeah.
The Quadra. The iPhone Quadra 900
right.
AV.
But then let's confuse it by adding in the iPhone Centris line to go along with it.
And each one has one feature change difference.
Right, but it's in software. So the only way to tell is to try all the features on the phone and see what works and what doesn't.
I just really hope this rumor... what it should be... I think I said this already, but it should be the iPhone 6C. It should look like an iPhone 6, but in a 4-inch form factor and have the same A9, all the other things.
I think that they should just rebrand the whole stinking way of doing it so that there's just three iPhones. Yep. They're all basically the same except for the screen size.
Yep.
Yep.
And it's totally called like the iPhone, iPhone Mini, iPhone, and the iPhone Plus.
There you go.
I like that. But now we have the whole thing about the supposed dual camera thing that'll only be on the iPhone Plus.
Oh, no. Plus. Really? It's only going to be on the Plus?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't think I have that. That camera thingy in here. What's the rumor about the camera thing?
No way Apple's going to make me buy a Plus again. I don't care what they put on there.
The Plus could come with free lap dances, and I still wouldn't buy it.
Well, how hot is the iPhone?
That's a good point. I might borrow one.
Okay, yeah, borrow it from a friend. What's the camera rumor?
All right, so the camera rumor is that the iPhone 7 Plus, so the 5.5-inch screen iPhone, will have dual cameras on the back. So one will be like a narrow field of view, and the other one will be a wide field of view. The narrow field of view is going to have optical image stabilization. And then the other camera will have a 2x or a 3x optical telephoto built in.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And then it's going to use the technology that Apple got when they bought that company?
Linux. Is it Lynx or Linux? I've heard it.
I think it's Lynx. I think it's LINX.
Right. It's just called Lynx.
Yeah, so Lynx. And so then their software will let the cameras work together. So that you can then stitch together an image in software in your iPhone based on what's captured from both lenses and get a much better image with much higher image quality and potentially something where you can choose your depth of field after you've shot the photo.
Yeah, so it's going to capture a lot more data. And the some of the image, if you've seen any of the images of the Lynx versus like the iPhone 5, Galaxy S4 kind of stuff, it's amazing. The sharpness level is so much higher.
Oh, yeah. And well, before Apple bought them, they were claiming that with the technology they developed, you could get SLR quality photos off of a smartphone.
So does this also, sorry.
Does it help improve the whole lack of optical zoom on the iPhone?
Well, one of the lenses is going to have an optical optical zoom.
But I mean, is it either zoomed in or zoomed out, or is there a range between?
I would assume there's
a range.
Go
to.
Yeah, you have control over the zoom range.
Okay,
so that, so you can.
I mean, it's probably not going to be very high. I would say it would be 2 or 3x.
But range. I just find it fascinating that most people don't understand that they're just cropping their photos when they zoom.
Oh, you don't think most people understand that?
No, most people have no clue.
They think they're actually zooming.
Yeah, and I find it's better to not zoom and then crop after the fact. You get a better quality image.
Yeah, that's what I tell people to do.
Yeah,
especially
if you
use
zoom before you take your photo.
Well, I mean, I think that's
cool, like Photoshop or something.
If you don't care about the quality of, as far as graininess or what have you, so like if I'm taking photos of, you know, a presentation, like a PowerPoint kind of thing. Just
sure.
And I just want to get the words. I just want to make sure that the words are in focus. I'll pinch and zoom and make sure that the words are in focus and get what I need, just as long as I can read it, sort of thing. But other than those sorts of situations where I 0% care about the quality, I just want what I want in focus. That's the only time I do it. Otherwise, if I needed to crop stuff, I do it later.
Yeah. Well, it's because I think in the iPhone, it is just doing a cropping. It's not doing any pixel interpolation. It's not like doing anything with the pixels.
Yeah, well, maybe it is. I don't know.
I don't think that it is based on the quality that you get out of it.
Yeah, it's just a basic crop.
I've never gotten a good image from a zoomed in photo on my 6S now. It's just not great.
Yeah.
But the other thing on this Lynx technology too is I think with the dual camera stuff, there's also some like 3D things that they can do.
Yes. Now whether or not that will
VR and all that stuff, and we know Apple's looking into those technologies as well. So this may be the start of a system that'll eventually play into some software stuff where you can do like 3D scanning with your iPhone, that kind of stuff,
which would be kind of cool. And yet I would have to go borrow someone's phone because I'm not buying the big size iPhone.
Well, hopefully the trickle down effect will come into play. And so maybe you won't get it on the 7, but 7S. Right?
Sure. Yeah, that's possible. And Apple does have some technology that they are looking at. Actually, I think they have a patent filing where they're doing stuff with curved lenses so that you can you can do what you're doing today with the camera that has a little bump coming off the phone, but make it flush. So if they can pack more into that smaller space, then I think it would make it easier to do dual cameras on the iPhone 6 or 7 as opposed to the Plus models. Excuse me, in addition to the Plus models.
I just want optical image stabilization on my 7. That's all I care about.
Hopefully that'll that'll be the trickle down. You know, maybe it'll be okay. The new one has this dual lens system, but we're adding optical image stabilization to the 7.
Yep.
That'd be cool.
Okay.
I haven't heard that rumor though.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Neither have I.
That may be a tricky one to have out there. Apple Watch 2. Seems like it will be entering mass production in the second quarter of 2016. I guess there was a trial production that ran this month, according to, wait for it, DigiTimes.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the problem with DigiTimes. For the longest time, they were absolute crap with everything they said.
Right.
Then they started getting a lot of stuff right.
Yeah.
And so now we're looking at what they're saying, and it's like, well, is this one right or is it crap?
Well, I think what happens is you have to, they had to build up like this false reputation as like a leak source before they could get people leaking stuff to them.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's clever.
Right? So you just start saying stuff like you're getting leaks from somewhere, and then the other leakers are like, oh, maybe Digitimes is a good place to...
Yeah. Like, I never figured that out with iPhone Alley. We never had leak. Well, I think we might have had one thing, but yeah, we weren't really known for leaks. Maybe that's how
you do it. Yeah, you got to build up sources, yeah. Right? And so maybe one way to do that is you just start spouting off stuff, and maybe occasionally you get one or two things right, and then more people start leaking stuff to you.
Ooh,
they think
yeah.
you're like the site.
Cool.
Because I agree with Jeff. I mean, they've gotten a little bit more accurate over time. They're still not. Nobody's 100% anyway. So
yeah.
No.
But you know, I would say they're right more than half the time.
Yeah. So what? When would the next Apple Watch be available based on a second Q 2016?
I think you're looking production? At an 18-month upgrade cycle.
So it's going to be
sounds right.
So it would be a holiday purchase.
Ooh, I can't wait that
to a
long.
Spring purchase.
My poor little watch.
That's smart. Do you not have an Apple Watch right now?
No, I do. Of course I do. How would I know what time it was?
What's the Apple Watch 2 going to do that's going to be so revolutionary?
Faster.
That's what's not being talked about.
Faster.
So.
But if it, you know, if one of the benefits of it taking so long added some neat, like, glucose tracking or, you know, health data source
stuff. I think that's where the big upgrades need to be, you know, beyond just the, I mean, faster. And we've also heard that might have a FaceTime camera. Right. I mean, but
yeah.
So I'd rather wait 18 months so that my bank account doesn't suffer as much and
get some sweet upgrades
and get a little bit better upgrades. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, give me a better processor.
You know, it's also
faster and longer battery life.
It's also possible that part of what they're factoring in is the weaker than expected sales. Not that it, you know, had terrible sales.
Well, we don't know that they had weaker than expected
sales. No, I think they had better than expected sales, to be honest.
I think the problem with the interpretation of the sales figures is that people were expecting Apple to immediately sell Apple Watches on the scale that they sell iPhones today. And and the iPhone is what, 7 years old now?
Yeah. Nothing Apple, no, I shouldn't say nothing, but I mean, there's going to be hardly anything that Apple could ever do that is going to sell on the scale of the iPhone. Because the iPhone was coming into a market that was dying for something like the iPhone. And definitely the smartwatch market was not like that. So why anybody would have thought that is beyond me. And you
because
know, if anybody's looking at things like the Apple Car, it's not going to be that big as well, because there's other players that are doing interesting things in the space already, like Tesla, and you've got Google in there messing around with stuff, and even some of the car companies are getting more innovative. By the time Apple gets that product to market, you know, there's not enough disruption they can do there to like blow that market up. The smartphone, you know. So anybody who ever compares any new product that's coming out to the iPhone and thinks that Apple's going to suddenly launch it in year one, and I think also people forget, in year one, the iPhone didn't sell that much. So they need to compare year one iPhone to year one Apple Watch. I haven't even done that. How many year of the iPhone, how many iPhones did Apple sell?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it wouldn't surprise me if Apple sold more Apple Watches than they sold first-year iPhones. I mean, look at the Apple Watch right now. It took, what, less than 8 months for Apple to take 50% of the smartwatch market?
Right.
In 8 months, Apple sold more Apple Watches than every other smartwatch maker has ever sold, combined. And people are saying, oh, well, it was disappointing sales, and it's because they're not... They're making an unrealistic comparison here. If anyone else had sold watches on the scale that Apple has, it would be hailed as an amazing success and a coup in the smartwatch market and in the wearables market. But it's Apple, and everyone's like, oh, crappy sales. No, they've outsold everyone.
Yeah.
All right, while you're talking, I found some numbers, so I'm going to do a little math. I'll let you know.
Okay.
It looks like they definitely sold more iPhones in the first year than what is predicted to be Apple Watches, but I don't think by much.
Hmm. Yeah, and I know it's a hard comparison to make because Apple is not telling what the actual sales numbers are for Apple Watch.
Right, we're guesstimating at best as how many Apple Watches they sold.
And speaking of the Apple Car, that's seems like they may be stalling out on the Apple Car. So
I don't think so.
Well, that's the report from Apple.
I think
Insider.
The report is wrong. So I think the hiring freeze is accurate, but I don't think the project is stalling.
Yeah, it's not like a bunch of people are leaving Apple. There's one guy, Steve Zadisky.
Right. So the guy that's rumored to be in charge of a project that hasn't been confirmed has left the company. I know I'm being kind of hyperbolic right there, but
yeah.
But okay. So the deal is he was the guy that is supposedly heading up the Apple Car project, and he has decided that he just wants to go do something else now. And from the insider information that that we've been able to get so far, it sounds like he just really decided it was just ready for something different. So there, no bad feelings, no tension about where the project is going. So a hiring freeze makes sense. Why would you continue to hire people when you're not sure who's going to be running the project? Why not wait until you get a new lead in place and get everything stabilized with the new leadership, and then you go back into hiring again?
Yeah. Well, there's also rumors saying that Johnny Ive is currently displeased with the project, with the direction, I guess. But I mean, okay. It's still early. Why not, I don't like this one. Let's try again, guys.
Yeah. I don't put a lot of weight in Johnny Ive being displeased with the project right now, simply because they're at a point where it's really easy to be displeased with stuff and try different things, because that's what they're doing. They're trying things right now.
Yeah, well, if you look at the history of the development of the iPhone, there's a lot of that happens. And there better be some displeasure at some point and back to the drawing board sort of activity to get it right. So,
here's the numbers as near as I can tell, just getting back to Apple Watch versus iPhone. It seems like Apple sold about 5.5 to 6 million units of iPhone. I have 6.1 million in the first five quarters. The numbers I found for the first four quarters were 5.49 million. And I believe Apple Watch, the estimates were around 5 million, but I want to say that was for 2015, which is only, I think, three quarters, right? Of Apple selling it. So that doesn't include this past quarter. So Apple either sold, I think it's fair to assume that in the first year of sales, Apple sold as many, if not maybe more, Apple Watches than they did original iPhones. That doesn't mean anything, but it's just an interesting number when people are saying, oh, the Apple Watch is a flop.
Yeah.
And no, it's I don't think it's a flop at all.
I see tons of
Apple Watches, that sort of thing. Sorry.
I feel like maybe it's a situation where once you decide, I want to buy such and such car, you suddenly see tons of that car everywhere, right?
Right.
So now that I have an Apple Watch, I'm constantly looking at people's wrists, and I see a lot of Apple Watches.
I see a lot of them too. And what's interesting, about the Apple Watch versus the phone is I see a lot of people who have Apple Watches that have Android devices.
Really?
Which, to me, that says future potential iPhone sales.
That's weird. It's weird that they would... Because you can't really with that.
There's a halo effect thing. The other thing about the why you can't compare iPhone again to Apple Watch is Apple Watch has nowhere near the potential for growth that the iPhone had. So, you know, we're saying they sold about the same number in the first year, but see, the thing is, the iPhone had huge potential for growth.
And right. I don't. And Apple Watch smartwatches are going to get more limited market.
Yeah, well, and they're going to get more popular, and more people are going to have them over time. But it's never going to be the numbers of people that have smartphones.
Well, I think that
they're just not going to equate.
The halo effect thing is probably going to be more of a cheaper Apple Watch that people say, you know, I was going to buy a watch for $50, but, you know, spend $50 more and get a second or an older generation Apple Watch just for funsies and see what it does for me. And then maybe once they get into it, they'll actually buy a more expensive current gen kind of thing.
Now, I'm arguing, I'm already seeing a lot of people who have Apple Watch who don't have iPhones, and I think
that doesn't make any sense to me.
That gets Apple into the ecosystem. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense to me either. It's like, what do you sync it with? How do you...
how did you activate
it? How do you do anything with
that? Did you, like, go to your friend's house and activate it with their phone, and then...
Yeah. True. You know what? Now that I take that back, you know, probably is I'm probably seeing people that have a work phone. It's an Android issued, and they probably have a personal iPhone in their pocket. Because I didn't really think it through. That's what's going on. That's what I'm seeing. So you're right, Michael. It'd be the other way around.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
To that point, Apple needs to give Android support. I was reading an article somebody was throwing out that Apple should develop an Apple Watch app for Android.
Yeah. That would do some halo.
Yeah, maybe after version 2 comes out.
Because because you know, Android is got it going the other way, right? You can get an Android watch with your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
A smartware watch. Smartware, is that what it's called?
Yes. And and look at the path that Apple followed with the iPhone when it first came out, and same thing with the iPod. When it first came out, sync with Apple products only. So sync with a Mac only. And then Windows support and Android support was added later. So there's no reason why they couldn't do the same thing with the Apple Watch. Version 2 comes out, and they sell their first wave to the Apple faithful, and then they roll out their Android app.
Yeah, I think it would be a good way to boost Apple Watch sales, and then again have the longer term effect of having a halo effect. Because if you can get people who aren't familiar with Apple ecosystem into the ecosystem with a product like, you know, an Apple Watch, and it's a little bit lower, you know, cost of entry, not much than an iPhone, but it probably feels to a lot of people like less of a big commitment to the platform. Then you suck them in, and they're like, "Oh, this is pretty cool. Maybe I want an iPhone the next time I have to upgrade because the experience is going to be that much better."
It would also be weird. Too, because all Apple Watch apps have companion apps on iOS, right?
Yeah, it'd be a little bit more of a challenge, I think, from a technological standpoint. But maybe that's the hook, though. If they can get it working where they can just recognize, they have Facebook on the Android phone. Yeah, you'd have to sideload apps.
That would be really maybe really tough. I don't know if that's possible.
Well, no, would it really be though? Because you're really just downloading the app and then pushing it to the phone, right?
Yeah, but
to the watch.
I would say still a majority of the apps for the Apple Watch are
not
remote.
Yeah, right? Are not? That's right too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be much more technically challenging.
Yeah, the scope of apps that would work would be much more limited. And honestly,
that might benefit the whole thing, right?
Yeah, it could.
It could.
All right, let's do picks. Right,
so you get the sample. It's like drugs. Here's a little sample.
Here's the
you want
taste.
More, you got to come over to our platform.
Little taste of the apple. Jeff, what's your pick?
My pick this week is the updated GarageBand.
Oh, man, that's my pick.
Oh, well, then, okay, you can have it. I can pick something else. It's okay. I can do this. Actually, I found a package tracking app that I finally really like.
Ooh, okay.
Yes, and it is called Parcel Track.
Okay.
And you can pick it up for free. And there's like an in-app purchase for a couple bucks that gives you more control over notifications. But it can figure out what the tracking number is from from say like an email that you have, and you can, or you can copy a tracking number out of a message and just drop it in here, and it knows what the track or what service it's from, and it's really good about proactively getting your tracking notification updates, and it can feed all that data back to you and push notifications to your Apple Watch
but does it have a widget for your Mac?
Maybe. I can't remember.
It probably doesn't. There are only like three widgets that are
who regularly. Uses widgets.
I use widgets.
I know, but
besides me, I'll tell you the widgets I use. I use the deliveries widget.
Of course.
I use the Wolfram Alpha widget, but that's probably a very narrow situation. Yeah. And I use the weather widgets. And I have a couple other ones that I never ever use, like the dictionary. I occasionally will look at the stocks widget. Very, very occasionally will use a translate widget.
I use the calculator and the conversion widget.
I use
although I should just be using Spotlight for that.
Yeah.
I don't use any widgets.
I guess
on
I
my
forgot
Mac
there's
at
a
all.
Conversion widget.
I even shut off the keyboard shortcut that takes you to the widget screen.
Oh, see, I added one to my trackpad. I use a four-finger click to get my widgets.
Yeah, if I accidentally end up on the widget screen, like, you know, like I'm helping someone else with their computer and I end up on the widget screen, I usually say things out loud that I shouldn't.
Yeah, I can see that.
It just annoys the crap out of me. I don't want that thing around.
Okay, so Parcel, is that by Ivan Pavlov?
I think that's the one.
Sort of a reddish brown box.
Yep, that's it. It's called Parcel Track, and it's a blue icon. Oh. With a little white silhouette of a dolly with a couple boxes on it.
Okay, I'm not seeing that one.
Well, then how about if I find the link and send it to you?
That would be awesome. And there's an Apple Watch app, I assume, or version for it, extension, whatever.
I think. Yo, yeah. I mean, I get my Apple Watch notifications.
Okay.
And it's from. Uber Blick Labs.
Okay. Yeah, just send me a link. And it's free?
It's free with in-app purchases.
Okay.
But I haven't found a need really to use the in-app purchases. Because what it does, it adds in additional tracking features. And I don't have enough packages I need to track that added features that come along with that $3 in-app purchase are necessary.
Gotcha.
I just make my own widget for doing package tracking. I just pull up the package tracker in Safari, you know, like on UPS.com, and I use the open in dashboard option in Safari.
You're such a hacker.
You're out of control.
I can't believe that feature still exists.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Where you can turn anything in a web browser into a widget. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it basically uses the bib tags to figure out the area. So if you pull up UPS.com and you track your package and you go to the package tracker window, you know, where it shows the status, you could activate that in Safari and then it'll highlight that section of the screen and turn it into its own little widget. So then okay. You can just come back later and you don't have to go to the website. It'll just live update right there in the widget window.
Gotcha. Okay. Adam, what is your pick?
My pick is actually, and I want to verify it still is. I think it's still the free app of the week on iTunes on the App Store.
Oh, okay.
And it is a little game called, it's still the free app of the week. It's called Piloteer. And it's a little kind of physics game based on having this jetpack. So you're this woman and you have a jetpack and you have to control the jetpack, and it's really kind of hard. It's one of those like fail games where you're gonna just like crash a lot.
Nice.
So it's easy to play, hard to master kind of thing. And so you're
I'm watching the video right now. It's pretty cool.
Back and forth, and you get little missions that you try to complete. So it's like, you know, fly over to the mailboxes and land on the mailboxes. And then the challenges get progressively harder and harder. So it's just a fun little game, and it's got kind of cool little art style and graphics to it. And it's totally free this week, so you can pick it up for free and just play it. And we were having a lot of fun with it, but it's got a little bit of that, you know, Flappy Bird, you're going to just like constantly fail. So if that bothers you, maybe avoid it. It can be really frustrating. But then it's also very rewarding, like when you actually complete a task, you're like, yes, I finally did it. So from Fixed Point Productions, Piloteer. It's the free app of the week. Hopefully cool. It'll still be free by the time people hear this. I don't know how long that lasts. It might just be till Sunday. So grab it quick.
Yep, grab it. And you know what my pick of the week is. It's GarageBand. And you heard me go on and on about it for a while because it's so cool. I mean, I remember when the first iPad came out and I was getting all these, there are a lot of loops, a lot of loop and music apps out there that did some of this stuff. But I don't think I've played with an app that was as easy and as powerful as the new GarageBand loop stuff is. It's really impressive. And for $5, it's like they're just giving it away. They're giving away a $100 app. So check it out.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Crazy. I'm trying to think. There was I had a Loops app that was almost as good. It's the one like Jimmy Kimmel used on his.
Oh,
but that was more had to record. You had to record your own stuff and then you could loop it.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking
Loopy,
about.
I think it was called Loopy.
Yeah, he did a whole song with Billy Joel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I don't think it has built-in loops. I think you have to record all your own.
You have to record all your own.
Yeah. But it had a similar feel to it in terms of how you used it with the little grid layout, you know, where you would tap each loop or you could tap whole rows or you could kind of all time them out. But yeah, the one in GarageBand is just, it's amazing how quickly you can have something that sounds really good, even if you're not a musician.
Yeah. It's like you can, what's, is it Ableton? Is that the one that you can do loops with
Ableton
that a lot of
Live,
people
yeah.
live perform with? I think you could really set up a live performance with this thing.
Probably. Yeah.
Especially with like an iPad Pro, you could do some really cool stuff.
I think that's what's most exciting about this update to me to GarageBand, because I'm probably never going to use these features because I'm not into creating original music. But it shows, I think, and inspires other people and other developers to show what the platform can do and how far you can take it. You know? So
yes.
And again, especially on the iPad Pro, it's awesome because you got just all that extra real estate.
It's really cool on the iPad Pro.
Yeah, I better go to the Apple Store and play with it on the iPad Pro.
Yeah,
oh,
you need to hop
hey,
to
can
it.
Can I bring up something that really sucks before we go?
Vacuums?
That's in the, I think it's in the 9.3 update, and a lot of people are hoping it's just oversight. But it looks like Apple, in the last two version updates, with the Apple Pencil, Apple Pencil stopped working outside of apps that are designed for Apple Pencil. So right now on my iPad Pro, and I do this quite frequently, I use the Apple Pencil just to like point around the screen in like apps like, you know, my RSS reader or, you know, to like scroll and click on things. That's not working. That Apple took that ability out in 9.3, the 9.3 update.
What?
Yeah.
Well, 9.3 is still beta.
Right. It's still beta. So but people thought, oh, when the first version came out, oh, you know, maybe they're just doing some tweaks. And then Apple released this update this week, and it's still, the functionality is still not there. So there's some people that are theorizing that Apple wants the Apple Pencil to be reserved exclusively for, you know, like doing Apple Pencil type stuff, like artwork and things like that. And for everything else, you're supposed to use your finger because Steve Jobs said so.
Yeah, nobody wants to use a stylus.
I hope that's not really the case.
I hope it's not the case either, but it's looking more and more like that might be the case. So sorry, I forgot.
Okay, what about the people that that have issues with their hands, where using their fingers to do that manipulation is actually kind of hard, and a stylus is much easier?
And then you get a third party stylus. No, no,
yeah. Apple Pencil. Yeah, yeah. Then why would you even buy an Apple Pencil?
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's wrap it up.
Yep. Sorry.
iPhone picks in the show notes can be found at theiosshow.com. You can review the show in iTunes. We appreciate that. Rate the show. Tell a friend. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your feedback, questions, comments, all that stuff. And, of course, there is a comment thread on every episode on the show, so you can, you know, post public comments for people. And the show is sponsored by Yamaha with their AG03 and AG06 series of personal USB audio mixers. Check them out at usa.yamaha.com.
Yamaha.
Thank you. And advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter. Thank you for being here.
Hey, can I plug one other thing
real quick? No, we don't allow that.
Mac Stock. Mac Stock. Are you going to Mac Stock, Michael? You should be going.
When is it?
It is July 16th and 17th or 15th and 16th.
I'll probably
if you go to Mac
be
Stock Expo and Conference.com. I'm going to be there. Jeff, are you going?
Is that a weekend?
I may be going.
Okay. 16th and
it's
17th?
It's July 16th and 17th. It's in Woodstock, Illinois.
I know where that is. That's a dumpy little town.
Yeah, well, it's actually not technically in, it's close to Woodstock.
Okay, so it's in like Des Plaines or something?
Crystal Lake.
Crystal Lake, okay. That's nice. Crystal Lake is nice.
At the college there. There's a college there where we're going to be speaking, and I'm going to be presenting. There's lots of people going there, and it should be a lot of fun, and should have had my discount code in front of me.
So you're flying into O'Hare then?
If people want to go and want to discount a ticket, email me, mattcast@gmail.com, and I'll send you a link where you can get a discount. But Victor Cahiao is going to be there. Melissa Davis is going to be there. Julie Kuehl, Chuck Joyner, Don McAllister, Allison Sheridan, bunch of us. Barry Falk will be there. And we're doing the barbecue again, his Midwest Mac barbecue. And I think tickets are only $150 for 2 days of conference, which is a really good deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
These plane tickets are obnoxiously expensive.
MacStockConferenceAndExpo.com. Check it out. And I can give you a discount. Email me, macguest@gmail.com. And I'm sorry I didn't have the URL ready for you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yes. I'll have to consider it. I may be able to make that work.
I would imagine you would have lodging covered close by.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably talk Barry into letting me sleep on his floor or something, at the very least.
You don't still know people in?
I know some people in that area, yeah. I could stay in Evanston, maybe, or in Chicago, wherever. Yeah. Yeah, so check it out. What is it, Mac Store or Mac Store?
Mac Stock Conference and Expo.com.
There we go. Cool. Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, and the TMO Daily Observations podcast. It's an awesome podcast. Check that out. And at J Gamet on Twitter, if you want to like tweets, put a little heart on one of his tweets, you can do that too.
Yeah, put your heart on my tweet. I'd really like that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And I guess you could follow me on Instagram. You could do that. I probably put more stuff on Instagram than I do on the Twitters. So you can do that. You can heart my Instas. So yeah, with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck.
Yuck, yuck, no. No. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus.